Morning, we'll be in chapter 23 of Proverbs. Again, this is a roadmap of how to live your life. I won't say it's a rule book because it's not rules and regulations, but it's a designated plan on how to live your life correctly. And if you hear what the Spirit is saying, if you have the ears to hear it, it will direct your paths. Doesn't it say in the Scriptures that the Lord directs the paths of the righteous? In another place it says the steps of man are ordered of the Lord. And if you will listen to what He's saying and follow His patterns, life will be much greater and much more rewarding than anything you can come up with on your own. I don't care if you own all the banks in the United States or the world and have all the money, you cannot have the peace and satisfaction that you will have by following God's ways. That's simple. Okay? But I'll read it first and we'll break it down. Verse 1, when you sit to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich, cease from your own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, they fly away as an eagle toward heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that has an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, says he to thee, but his heart is not with you. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt you vomit up and lose thy sweet words. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Remove not the old landmark and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. For their Redeemer is mighty, he shall plead their cause with you. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to the words of knowledge. Withhold not correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod he shall not die. You shall beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. My son, if your heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things. Let not thy heart envy sinners, but be you in the fear of the Lord all the day long. For surely there is an end, and your expectation shall not be cut off. Hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart into the way. In the way, be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Hearken unto the father that begat you, and despise not your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not, also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Your father and your mother shall be glad, and she that bare you shall rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways. For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lies in wait as for prey, and increases in transgressions among men. Who has woe and who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babblings and who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine and they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not now upon the wine when it is red, when it gives his color in a cup, when it moves itself aright. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lies down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lies upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shalt you say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Okay, now let's go back and break this thing down, see what we can gather and glean out of it. He says, whenever you sit to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what's before you. Most rulers, I'm going to say most, tell me their nature and character. How about ungodly? Is that true? Majority of them are not godly people, are they? Most people that are in places of rulership in this world today are there for the reason of wealth, control, power, domination over people, manipulation. That's their motivations, the wealth and the greed. So he says, consider when you're eating with one of these rulers, and you know, it's never changed from the beginning of time. People are always wanting to be leaders for a reason. There's a gain personal to them, some personal satisfaction out of being that controlling person. And that's what he's telling you to do. Look and consider. What do you think they got, or how did they get it? How did they get what they got? Someone tell me.
Probably cheating.
Cheating and deceiving. Dishonesty, right? So what they got before you is something they valued highly enough to cheat somebody for, and now you're going to partake of it?
No.
I don't need that. See what I'm saying? My Father can provide what I need. I don't have to go out and cheat and con somebody, connive somebody. I don't have to try to sell you something for $19.95. You know, send me 1995 and I'll give you the latest revelation from God.
Dishonesty.
That's called prostitution and merchandising of the gospel. You know, I don't need to do that. God will take care of me. And I don't have to have a lot of money in the bank to live. I can live within my means. I don't have the desires for all this stuff that the world has. It's nice. It's great to have it. And I think we should live nice and comfortably, but not at the expense of somebody else.
Yeah.
But when I earn it myself, me and my wife earn our living, then that's what we live by. And we're not going to sit and look and say, boy, I wish I had all the money that people over had, because, man, look what they got. I'm satisfied where God's got me. And that's what we should all be. Wherever we're at, be satisfied. When we get satisfied with where we're at, and I'm not talking about getting lazy or anything, I'm saying being satisfied and not wishing I had what everybody else had, then maybe God will promote us somewhere else.
Be content.
Be content with whatever lot you're in, right? And it says in verse 2, and put a knife to your throat if you a man be given to appetite. Now there's something strange about this word appetite, because it's not really there the way you think it is. Said, if you're a man that likes to eat, don't put a knife to it. It's not what it says. The word is nefesh in the Hebrew. It means the soulish. If we're talking about something soulish, let's say it this way. Let me say it another way so you understand it better. If you put a knife to your throat, if you be a man given to a soulish appetite. Hello?
Covenant.
Covenant is what somebody else is wanting. See, if I'm a man that's wanting to desire to just keep heaping up and heaping up and heaping up, not necessarily food, but all kinds of stuff, that soulish appetite is never getting enough, is it? Read Proverbs 6 about that, when it never gets enough. Okay? That's what he's talking about, this soulish appetite. If I have a great soulish appetite in me, that's a desire for all kinds of things and never satisfied. If I have that, and that's what the meaning of that word is. The word appetite's literally not there. It's implied, but it's not there. But if they have that soulish desire for everything of never having enough, always wanting more, then he said it'd be better to cut your throat. That's what he's telling you. Than to set and desire and think about all that guy's got and think about how little you got. You know?
It'll drive you mad.
It will drive you mad. Verse 3 says, be not desirous of his dainties, because they are a deceitful meat. Okay? They are a deceitful meat. All the things that wealthy people, rich people, people in power and control and domination, those people, everything they have is deceitful. Because you look at it, and most people look at people with a lot of money, wealth, positions, and they say, man, they got it made. You don't know what's in that person's mind. What kind of hell's going on inside of that thing?
Well, if they got it by stealing, they assume anybody that comes around is going to steal it.
From them? So do you think they can really be your friend?
They can't enjoy it.
No. They can't enjoy it because they're afraid somebody's going to take it from them. Now, I know several like that. Day and night.
Too much stuff.
Can't sleep at night. I tell people, hey, I don't have to worry about it. I can leave my doors unlocked. You know why? I ain't got nothing anybody to steal. I don't care.
Grass is greener, always greener on the other.
The way they see it, isn't it? The way that soulish eye looks at it. Yeah. Look at verse 4. Labor not to what? Okay, literally it says, do not labor to become or accumulate wealth and riches. See, don't labor to become rich, or don't labor to accumulate wealth and riches. See, don't labor just so you can stack it up. Okay? And look at verse 5, and it tells you why in verse 5. Why not to? One of the reasons. Will you set your eyes upon that which is not? Because riches certainly make themselves wings, they fly away as an eagle toward the sky, is what it should say. How many people have we known that has won the lottery and their lives went upside down? Suicides, kidnappings, drug overdoses, robberies, you name it. Their lives are upside down because they got their eyes set on something that wasn't for them. If God wanted you to have that money, He'd give it to you.
I'm thinking a scripture like where it says about they had their coffers full, or is there something like that?
Yeah, there's in the New Testament, Jesus gave one where they tore the barns down, built more barns to pour stuff, and He said, "Tonight, your soul shall be required of you."
Because
they were focusing on stuff instead of on the true riches of life. Okay.
Vanity.
Huh?
It's all vanity.
It's all vanity. Every bit of it. Every bit of it. Okay, verse 6. Eat thou not the bread of him that has an evil eye. Who are they talking about? Who has the evil eye?
Ego.
Well, the natural man. The one we've been talking about there. These rulers. Okay? These people in positions of authority. They said, don't eat the bread of him that has an evil eye. Neither desire his dainty meats. The things that he has. You know, I don't desire them. I know people that are very wealthy. Absolute millionaires. But you know what? I really don't desire what they have. Because I'd have to be like them. Wouldn't you? So I don't have an issue. I don't have an issue about that. You know, I don't care what anybody else has. I just treat everybody the same. And if they have nothing or if they're millionaires, I could care less. I don't give them any more respect than anybody else. And I don't give them any disrespect, you know, because they don't have it or do have it. Just try to treat them all the same as best as I possibly can. Okay, verse 7. It goes on and says, because he, as he thinketh, or as he calculates, the word really calculate is in there where it says thinketh, as he calculates in his heart, or his what?
And
the word there really is that nephesh again, that speaks of the soulish part. In his soulish, as he thinks in his soulish mind, so is he. Now, if I'm a child of God, but yet I think I'm a child of the world, what am I going to act like? I'm going to think I'm that child of the world. And that's what people think when they get started in religion or whatever you want to call it, religious social clubs. They think all I got to do is say these words and I'm there. It's not what it is. If I say these words and I believe these words, I'll be those words. Is that true? I am what I believe. That's what this is saying. If I'm a child of God, I'll act like a child of God. If I'm not a child of God, if I think I'm a child of God, I'll be that way. Like Don and I was talking, Don said something. He said, many are called, but few are chosen. And Don said something. He said, I feel like I've been called, but I don't know if I've been chosen. So in reality, and I'm using you for an example. I know you don't care. If it did, it's too late anyway. Okay, but here's what Don is saying to me when he said that. He doesn't yet believe that he's called. See, and that's what he said. Now he said, you were called, but you weren't chosen. Excuse me. You weren't chosen. You don't feel that there's something special about your life. And see, what you're thinking and what I believe by what we converse is that because you're not in a position like maybe I am as a teacher or something special you see, you don't think that's being chosen. But see, God can choose you for any. He places you, it says, where He chooses. He places you where He chooses in the body. So if He chooses to use you the way He's chosen to use you, doesn't mean you have to be something special. Whatever it is, if He chose you to be that, that's chosen. Okay? He could choose you to do positive or negative. It doesn't make any difference. It's what He chose for you to be.
Actually, I think He chooses you to do both.
Whatever needs to be done. So we have to realize that if I really believe I'm a child of God and God has called me to do something, I'm going to live like that child of God. And I'm going to do what I know in my heart is right to do, in my mind. See? And that's all you have to worry about. The rest of it, you don't have to worry about. What somebody else thinks you should be, or somebody tells you you should do. I never tell people, God wants you to do this or that. Because I think God has all the capacity in the world to tell you what He wants you to do. Now, if God came to me and said, Dave, I want you to go tell them people something, that would be a different story. But it's not my place to try to manipulate somebody. And in religious systems all through when I was in it, all the pastors would always come around, thus saith the Lord, God said you was going to do it, and you should be doing this, and you should be doing that. And God wasn't saying those things to me, but I was hearing God talk to me every day. I'm saying, well, if God's talking to me, what's He telling this ass over here to come and talk to me for? And I say that wild ass nature that beast has in him. Why is he sending this man? Because it wasn't him. It was that man trying to control me. And I know that God was speaking to me and telling me what He wanted me to do.
Well, that goes back to your verse 1. You know, like that word ruler.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean like what we think is a king or no. Something like that.
Anybody's an authority.
Right. If you've got someone coming in your life and they are placing something out before you for you to partake of or to eat. Just like so many people that we hear say, well, they gave me this prophecy, or I saw this vision, and I'm giving this to you. That's what he's talking about. If you partake of that...
Just because they gave it to you.
Right. You are eating food that's not godly.
And that's not godly, for sure. But again, because as he thinks or calculates in his mind, so is he. Eat and drink, says he to you, but his mind, his soulish mind, is not at all with you. See, he's telling you to eat and drink for a reason. His own calculations in it for what can I gain by giving. He's not giving it to you out of the goodness of his heart, in other words. He's got a motive behind it, some motivation for him to do something that appears to be good on the surface, but yet there's something for him in it.
It brings separation. It's an elevation.
Well, it's an arrogance and prideful, but yet there's still some benefit for him. He has a hidden motive in this thing. Okay? Verse 8, it says, the morsel which you have eaten shall you vomit up and lose the sweet words. Now, I want to do that in the, what one is it? NIV. Let me read this in the NIV. Okay. NIV says, you will vomit up the little you have eaten and you will have wasted your compliments. Okay? You've tried to butter up and be real nice and flatter the guy and said, won't do any good. The way the King James says it, you'll lose your sweet words. That's the words that you use to flatter him to try to make him think you really liked him. And that's what he wants you to do to start with, wasn't it? Hey, don't fall for that stuff. God will provide what you need. Okay, verse 9, speak not in the ears of a fool, because he will despise the wisdom of your words. Now, the word despise really isn't a real good rendering. You should say it this way. Speak not in the ears of a fool, because he will hold as insignificant the wisdom of your words. They won't see any wisdom. A fool has no way of judging wisdom, do they? So when they hear wisdom, it means nothing to them because they have nothing to compare it to. If you have a mind that is a foolish mind, it has no way of judging wisdom, does it? So it will hold it as insignificant, just like the sand or the dust of the earth. It'd be nothing. So there's a time when you don't speak the truth that you know, isn't there? When you perceive that this person doesn't have the ability to hear it, all you're doing is casting your pearls before the swine. Just wasting all effort that you'd put forth for no reason. And see, that's part of our growing process, to learn when to speak and when not to speak. There's a time, and I've had to learn, because early in my life I just put it everywhere, you know. And I've learned now I can shut it off when I perceive it's not there. There's no reason to go on. I just let them do what they want to do. Because they're going to anyway, aren't they?
Yep.
Let them go.
Don't go bang your head against that wall.
Didn't Paul say, let the ignorant remain ignorant? Let them be ignorant. It's all right. If that's what they want to be, let them be there. He says here in verse 10, remove not the land, the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fathers. Now, that's not just something thrown in there. That goes in the context of what we're talking about in this whole chapter, about the poor and the fatherless and the homeless. And who did God come after?
Those
people. Mm-hmm. He said he came for those. but not to remove the old landmark. What do you think that landmark is?
Christ on a cross.
The cross, okay. But it was a mark put in humanity, okay.
Before the foundation of the world.
He set a mark upon them. You know, remember Cain had a mark upon him? There's all kinds of things about that, but God put a mark upon his sons. Yeah, it's not a cross on their forehead or a big splotch or a 666, but the mark was the mark of his nature and character. That cross created a nature and character in him that he was willing to give his whole life, everything he had, for the rest of humanity.
You might say a DNA.
Yeah, it was his DNA. And in his DNA was this giving process that he was willing to give everything he had. He'd give it all up for everyone behind him. Okay? That was coming after him. And that's the mark, the old landmark. He said, don't remove that. Don't take away this character and nature of Christ that he has put within us. Don't touch this thing. Don't remove it. Okay? And enter not into the fields of the fathers. How do you think the rich got rich?
They took advantage of those
people, the fatherless, the homeless, you know, the ones that didn't know their identity. And isn't that what the church world's doing today? Mm-hmm. They're pillaging and raping and plundering these people's lives and living like some kind of royalty, while these poor people hardly have enough fuel to get to church and maybe not even nothing to eat.
They brainwash them and then take their money to
yep.
Tell them they're going to be blessed.
Yeah, give me your money. And I even heard a man tell me this one time. He said, this church needs to understand what it's like to pay their preacher. And he was a millionaire. I said, tell me, what can a man learn when his children are sitting there hungry, begging for food, and you say, no, I got a rich preacher down here we go to on Sundays, and I need to give him some money so he can go out and blow it on something. Or whatever he wants to, you know. I can't grasp that. I never could, and I never will grasp that as being anything God. He said, oh, they need to learn how to pay their preachers. And I said, get out of my face. I mean, you know, I learned, and I went on. Verse 11, because their Redeemer is mighty, and he shall defend or debate their cause with you. See? When someone takes advantage of you, it's not your place to go out and fight them back. You know, have his big quarrel with him.
The
battle is the Lord's. He will do it. But see, there's a lot of ways he'll do it. You got to listen to him. Get the direction from the Spirit of God. Verse 12, apply your heart or your mind, right? Apply your mind to what? Discipline. Discipline. Discipline.
Stay focused.
Discipline. 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 I couldn't say it. If I said it a million times a day, it could not be too many times. Discipline. Jesus said, if you'll continue in my word, you'll be my disciples or my disciplined ones, and you shall know the truth, and that truth, the truth that you know, will set you free. In our lives, in the natural, we need to come to a disciplined life. Very few people today, especially church folk, they all say, oh yeah, we're disciplined. Yeah, we are. No, they're not. They do anything they want to and justify it. And when you justify, you're just a lying to yourself.
That's why they like to keep that devil alive.
I'll keep that devil out there. It's his fault, see? Mm-hmm. But apply your heart to discipline and your ears to the words of knowledge. 13 goes right on and says, withhold not correction or discipline. That word is still discipline from the child. Because if you strike him with a rod, he shall not die. See, these words are discipline, and they're taking it away. There are several times that word should be discipline, instruction, and correction. Both of them should be discipline. When you get your focus off of discipline and all these other little bunny trails running down the road, you know, you get your focus off of what it's supposed to be. It's about the discipline. It's about the discipline. And if you can get discipline in your life, you won't have the issues that most of the world has in their life. Just be disciplined. Okay. Verse 14. You shall strike him with the rod and shall deliver his what? Huh? The word right there is... it's not suke because that's the Greek. Okay. It's the nephesh again. And it's that soulish life. You shall deliver his soulish life from hell. Now, why would I say soulish life from hell and not just his soul? A soul is made up and comprised of spirit and flesh together. It's a mixture. But what we're talking about here, he says, if you strike that child with a rod, you shall deliver their soulish life. And that's what life we have on this earth, isn't it? In the natural, we have a soulish life. And this flesh life that we live in, this body, he said, you'll deliver that life from hell. And that word hell there is Sheol. It means grave. So if the child is not disciplined, where is he going to end up?
In hell
most of his life, in the grave is what it's talking. Sheol speaks of the grave. So he's going to be in the grave early probably if he's not disciplined.
Or in his mind. He's constant. Yeah. He can't get out of that.
Yeah. But even physically, they'll end up many times in the grave when these parents are doing them no favor by turning them loose. There's an example this week. I took something for our kids down to Rose Avenue down here over the hill. And I passed three or four of these little four-wheelers and golf carts and gators and these little motorized vehicles running 40, 50, 60 miles an hour. They're not even supposed to be on the highway. And the parents put them in these little carts and there'd be three, four, five kids stacked on them, hanging all over them, flying all over the place, having a ball. Mom and Dad don't care because they're not in their hair. And as I pulled up to the property down there and started to back in, this kid was flying up behind me and I pulled up and stopped, started to back up, and he almost plowed, T-boned me in the side. Locked them up, slid, kids about to fall off the thing, no safety, no nothing, no tags on them, no slow-moving vehicle signs, no nothing, but the parents put them out there. So when they turn them loose like that and something happens to them, who do they want to blame? Mm-mm. I didn't put them on the road. They're real legal to be on the road. How can you blame anybody else but Mom and Dad? They put them out there.
No, you're right, but they don't look at that.
Oh, no.
All because you didn't keep aware of their children.
I wasn't aware of it. He was flying down the road 40 miles an hour and going to run behind me. I'm driving up there and pull up, start to back up. I look up, he's already locking it up, sliding right up beside him. You know, could have hurt him, could have killed him, could have wrecked my truck.
12-year-old.
And they're all, you know, like I say, 10, 12-year-old kids riding.
You see that at his house?
Oh, all the time.
They just turning, they're 11, 14, driving a tractor.
Mm-hmm.
They
don't have the mind to comprehend the consequences.
They wouldn't know what to do. Riding them back, they're sitting on top of the mower deck, riding them around. It's like,
they're stupid. You can go ahead and say it.
His son picking up a poisonous snake. And I'm like,
I liken it to giving a kid a machine gun in a crowded room and say, here, have fun.
You know, well, loaded. He does it all the time. I'm like, well, you know, it's only going to take one time.
One time. And that was the mentality of that I've ran through all my life. I don't understand it.
Like, why are you being so stupid?
I see people do it. They get out on the water and they'll give their kids a jet ski and they're not big enough to ride a bicycle. You know, they put them in a boat and with big horsepower in it, a little kid, and say, go ahead, have fun, you know, and they'll take off and run these boats. They don't have the mental capacity to understand the levity of their actions, or how much damage they can do or kill somebody. The parents think it's cute. And I've had that problem most of my life with adults that have no responsibility for their kids. They just let them go wild. And that's how they end up in the grave early. You know, it's, oh, don't get me on that one. I don't like it either. Okay. Verse 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
My son, if your mind is wise, not heart, but mind is wise, my mind shall rejoice, even mine. He said, you're going to make me happy. Father's saying, if your mind is wise, you're making me happy. And who doesn't want to please their father? He says, to make me happy, I need you to get your mind right. Okay? Verse 16. Yea, my reins shall rejoice. That word reins is not correct. It should be mind again. Yea, my mind shall rejoice when your lips speak the right things. And out of the abundance of the mind, the heart, or the mind, the mouth speaks. So when you have your mind right, what's going to come out of your mouth? The right words. And that's going to make God really happy. Verse 17. Let not your mind, say not heart, but your mind, envy sinners. But you be in the reverence of the Lord all day long. Continually, right? Be in reverence of the Lord. Verse 18, because surely there is an end, and your expectations shall not be cut off. Now that's a conditional statement. Surely there is an end, and your expectations shall not be cut off. That is, if your mind is wise and you say the right things, isn't that right? Isn't that the conditions that was put before that? The verses prior to that, didn't it say, if you're making God's mind happy if your mind is wise? And you'll make Him happy if you say the right words and are in reverence of Him all day long, right? That's the conditions.
That still doesn't separate you from your Father if you don't know
this. No, it doesn't separate you, but it means you're gonna your expectations will be fulfilled when you do what Father wants you to do. Okay? And that's just live with the nature and the character of Christ in you and let that come out of your life. Verse 19, hear. And that word here is Shama. So we're going to say it the way it should say. Hear intelligently with the intent to respond positively, my son, and be wise, right? And that word wise means wise in mind, word, and action. Mind, word, and action. And isn't that what those verses above said? Be wise in your mind and in your words that you speak. Correct? And guide your mind, right? Not heart, but guide your mind in the way or in the course of life, in God's course of life. Correct? In the way He wants you to go. So he said, let me read it again. Hear intelligently with the intent to respond positively to what you hear, my son, and be wise in your mind and your word and your actions. And guide your mind in the course of life that God has set for you. That make sense? Verse 20. Be not among winebibbers or among riotous eaters of flesh. He's talking about people out of control. He's not talking necessarily just drunkards or someone that just sits around and eats all day long. That's not the issue. What is the underlying issue? No discipline. How many times have we used the word discipline this morning? I'll say it again. Discipline, 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 discipline. See, no discipline in someone that's a drunkard or a riotous eaters of flesh. It's out of control. No discipline. Would you agree to that? Mm-hmm. See, this is the principles we got to look at. The principle of the thing. No discipline. Look at verse 21. Because the drunkard and the glutton shall come, and the word come literally isn't correct. It should say shall inherit poverty. They shall inherit poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. And the word drowsiness is not correct. It should say, and habitual laziness shall clothe a man with rags. Habitual laziness. Now, everybody has days when you just don't feel like burning up the whole thing in one day, you know. You just have days that's a little off. We're not talking about that. The word habitual is there. What does that habitual mean?
It's a habit.
You continually are lazy all the time. That kind of person we're talking about. Okay? The person that always finds an excuse not to do something that needs to be done.
Perpetually.
Perpetually, continually.
That's painted in kids' hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everlasting forever. Always lazy. Yeah. That's the one that creates the problems. So he's saying, don't be around people that are undisciplined and don't know what they're doing. You know, they're going to come to poverty. They're totally lazy and they're going to be clothed with rags. Verse 22. Hearken, there again, Shama. Hear positively with the intent to respond positively to your father that begot you, and disrespect not your mother because she is old. Now, do you really think it's talking about mom and dad? It's talking about God, your father, and who is this woman?
Your soul.
Your soul, because she is old. Don't disrespect her. And see, the soul that I have, I don't disrespect the soul, but I put her in her proper place.
That's the discipline.
There's the discipline to put my soul in the proper place, because my woman should not be out in front of my man. My man, Christ, should be in control. See, it's not about a physical thing. This is a spiritual thing. As long as my woman is in control, she will have no problem submitting to her man, her husband, will she? And God is our husband, isn't He? Okay? That's the issue we have to see. I spoke this a long time ago, and someone had asked me this question, and when I began to minister down in Texas, I said, someone asked me about this, about the women being in submission to the man. And so I'll tell you this. There's no woman going to be in submission to her husband until she's into submission to her man inside of her. When you're in submission to your man inside, when my woman is in submission to my man Christ in me, I can be in submission to anybody with no issue. But until then, I will never be in submission. I might bite my tongue once in a while, but I'll never be in submission until I submit to the Christ within me, to my soulish life submits to my Christ. Just the way it is. Okay. Verse 23. Buy the truth and sell it not. Now the word sell is not correct here. Buy it, and you know, because the mentality of the church world is buy and sell everything, isn't it? But it says here, buy the truth and surrender it not. Does that change the meaning? Sure it does. Don't give it up. Hang on to it. See, it's not about buying and selling like they're talking about, what most people think. But buy it and surrender it not. Also, he said, also buy wisdom and instruction. And guess what that word instruction is?
Discipline.
Imagine that. It's discipline again. And understanding. So he said, buy all these things. Buy truth and buy wisdom. Buy discipline and buy understanding. He said, all these things. And do not surrender them. Not just the one. Do not surrender any of them. Hold on to everything that God has given you. And when he says buy them, do you really think that he's talking about paying money for it?
No.
You're paying for it by your life, the way you live, aren't you?
You already have it.
Yeah. But you're becoming aware of it, and it costs you to become aware of it, doesn't it? We feel and feel all the pressures of life that bring us to that place where we're paying for it. Okay, verse 24. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that beget a wise child shall have joy of him. He's saying, if you buy these things or procure these things that God has set for you, the truth, the wisdom, the discipline, and the understanding, that the father is going to greatly rejoice when you realize these things in your life. And a wise child shall have, and he that begets a wise child shall have joy of him. So when we become wise by understanding what God has said in our lives, we're going to make the Father happy, aren't we? Verse 25, your father and your mother shall be glad, and she that bare you shall rejoice. Even the woman, my soul, when she comes in subjection to her husband, okay, once she gets there, she's going to appreciate the headship of her husband. Okay, that's a woman in submission. When she is not in fear of her husband, she has love and respect for her husband, but she honors the authority that's in that head.
You function as one,
but still the man is the head of the house. That's not talking about the man and woman. It's talking about the Christ within each person. Christ, the man, is the head of the house. And when she realizes that, she has no problem. Okay? She has no problem at all. Whenever my woman came in submission to my man, my life became a lot easier. I don't have the struggles anymore I had before. What's the point of having a struggle? If my woman is not wrestling with my man, what's the point? There's no struggle, is there? No issues. Just go ahead and live your life. Verse 26. My son, give me your what? Now, you know, everybody says, give your heart to Jesus. What would he do with it? He's already got one. I mean, that's what my mind says. What would he do with it? He never asked for it anyway. He said, my son, give me your mind and let your eyes observe or accept favorably, is what I should say. Not observe, but accept favorably my course of life.
Submission.
It's submission. It's discipline. When you have discipline, you will submit. See? Because you understand it's better for me to submit. I can fight it, but it's not going to do me a bit of good, is it? What did you say earlier, just a while ago? His plans and purposes will prevail, won't they? Okay? There's no way around it. But I like this verse when it says, "My son, give me your mind, and let your eyes not observe, but accept favorably my course of life." Okay? Then I have no problem with God's way of life. I love it. Now we go to 27. Seems like there's a context change, but it's not really. It's just the other side of the coin. Here we got, down here, we got everything lined up. Everybody's going good, aren't they? And now he's telling you the other side. Because a whore, an unfaithful woman, who's the unfaithful woman? And we're not talking about the church, but it is, but that's not who we're talking about here. It's a soul who's not in submission to her husband, to her man Christ. Is a deep ditch, right? Or literally a mysterious pit. You know, it's deep and dark, and you really can't see what's going on in there, can you? And it, what?
Might be ignorance.
Could be a lot of things.
Dark.
Yep. And a strange woman or an adulterous woman is a narrow pit or a narrow well. Deep. Again, it's talking the same thing. Said it twice. They call it parallelism, I think. Anyway, she also lies in wait as a prey, or as a robber, what it should say, not the prey, but robber, and increases the transgression or the faithless in humanity. She increases it. The woman, the soul, she lies in wait as a robber trying to steal from you, and increases the faithlessness in humanity. She seduces you to doing all kinds of things that you really shouldn't be doing. Right? That's what the woman does. Go back to Proverbs 7. It tells about that woman doing all them things. I ain't going to go back and do that chapter. I already did it. Okay. Verse 29. Who has woe? The little... Huh?
One that was seduced.
One that was seduced. Got, yeah. But the word woe really means grief. And who has sorrow? And that word literally means pain. So grief, the little word means pain, grief, and suffering. The word woe itself, basically. But who has pain, grief, and who has pain, and who has contentions? That's arguments, right? And who has babblings? That's complaints. And who has wounds? And the word wounds literally says bruises. Who has bruises without cause? Well, let me tell you something. Nobody. There's a reason for everything, isn't there? You don't have these things for no reason. And if you stop for a minute and say, who has it? And they say, oh, well, somebody does this or does... No, no. There's nobody has it for no reason, is there? There's always a reason. I've had people tell me, well, I was just sitting in this bar, mind my own business, been drinking for 3 hours, 4 hours, never said anything to anybody, and someone just waylaid me and knocked me in the side of the head. There's a reason for it. You've been drinking for 3 hours. You're probably drunk and don't know what you're doing. But you got it, didn't you? There's always a reason for something.
Might not remember what it is.
You don't remember what it is, but there was a reason for everything. Doesn't Ecclesiastes say there's a time and a season and a purpose for everything? The purpose and reason is the same thing there, isn't it? So it's always the reason. Who has redness of eyes, or literally blurred vision? Okay? Now, we're going to get into some spiritual things here, not just natural things. When it says it, who has blurred vision? They that tarry long, or literally procrastinate at the wine. Okay? They procrastinate. Now, procrastinate means they're not doing it, right? Procrastination, you're not doing anything, are you? So they procrastinate because of the wine. The wine is symbolic of what?
Revelation.
So they're procrastinating the revelation. They don't want to get to it just yet. Now watch what I'm saying. They hold off the revelation. They go to seek the mixed wine. They go to see the wine or the truth that's not pure. They want it mixed. They want it watered down, don't they?
Yeah, they want their ears tickled.
Tickle my ears, baby. Don't give me that truth. Romans says, some of them say, don't tell me because I don't want to be accountable for it. He said they're without excuse in Romans. Because he has revealed it to his his humanity, his creation. See, and these people, he's saying, they're trying to stay away from him. The way it's worded looks like they're blaming somebody that's drinking. It's not about drinking. It's about procrastinating from digging into the revelation, because when you get the revelation, now you're accountable, right? Now I'm accountable in my life because of the revelation. But they're not wanting that. They want to seek the mixed wine. They want to get that gospel light, the gospel L-I-T-E. Huh? Well, that's what they want. They want something easy and palatable. And see, in our society today, they have the L-I-T-E bread, and they have the L-I-T-E beer, and they take all the good stuff out of it and put chemicals back in it and say it's better than the real thing. What are they taking this stuff out and replacing it for if they don't use it for something else? And they do. They make money out of the good nutrients, sell them back to you in some other form, and give you a bunch of junk. The gospel, hence the gospel light, right? Verse 31, it says, look not, and literally it says, observe not the wine. And the word thou and upon shouldn't even be there. Observe not the wine, and that's the revelation, because it is red, okay? And because it gives your reflection. It says his color, it should be your reflection. Don't look into it because it gives your reflection. What's it saying?
It's
going to reveal what you really are. Don't do it, but don't look upon it, because it's going to tell you what it is. You look in the truth of God, and guess what it's going to do? That revelation, that wine, guess what it's going to give you? A true picture of what you are. Like a big mirror, isn't it? In the cup, when it moves or it goes down smoothly. So they said, don't look at it because you look at the cup and it looks so beautiful and it's got your reflection, all in that pretty, and you can drink it down so smoothly. But what happens then? At the last, it bites like a serpent and wounds like an adder. An adder has a very poisonous venom, and it can really destroy your flesh when it bites into it. And that's what the woman does. That's what that mind does to you. That soul is thinking. It destroys your flesh. Now, we know our flesh is going to return to the dust, don't we? But we're talking about, what's the word? Prematurely. We don't need that prematurely. We need it for a season. When it's done, we'll drop it off and step into the spirit realm and forget about it. But right now, we don't need all this suffering in this realm. We can get through without that. Verse 33, your eyes shall what? Behold. And literally it said, your eyes will see strange women. Well, it should say this. Your eyes will see harlots. And your mind shall utter perverse things. And when it says you shall see strange women or harlots, what is a harlot? Another name for harlot. An unfaithful woman. So we're going to see unfaithfulness wherever we're at when we're being intoxicated by the wine of carnality.
Well, that's within. You're seeing your...
Sure. You're seeing yourself.
Unfaithful self.
You're seeing yourself.
Unsubmissive soul.
Huh?
Your unsubmissive...
Unsubmitted soul. Unsubmissive part of your understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And your mind shall utter perverse things. When you see that, do you think you'll like what you see?
No.
He's telling you, if this is the way you're going to see it, you're going to have to get a hold of this revelation and take it in the purest form, not in a watered-down version that man has given you. Right? Why do you think Paul wrote and said in Timothy, study to show yourself approved, a workman needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing or accurately handling the word of truth? This is not easy. It's something that you've got to do, but if you're going to get there, it's something you have to go through.
So would this be like the negative things in your life that are teaching, correcting you?
Sure it is. You have to accept them too.
Yeah.
You have to accept them.
That happened to you or whatever.
It's okay.
That corrects you a lot more than positive, smooth stuff.
Sure.
It's easy to swallow.
Yeah, absolutely. Verse 34 says, yea, thou shalt be as he that lies down in the midst of the sea, or literally it says a noisy surf, like gets drunk and lies down on the seashore with the waves slapping up around you. Or as he that lies upon the top of a mast. You know how big a mast is on top, little pointy thing? How comfortable would that be? And see, that's all that's telling me is it wouldn't be smart to lay down in the surf with the waves beating on you, would it?
Especially drunk,
you drowned, something, you know. Wake up with jellyfish stinging you or something, you know, eating you up, having you a hard time. Or laying on top of a mast, which would be very sharp and it would be very uncomfortable, wouldn't it? As long as we're trying to avoid what God wants in our life will never be comfortable.
When you're on top of that mast, that's the epitome of the unstableness of the water.
Sure it is. Any slight movement below is increased above, isn't it? And it's very uncomfortable. If you were sitting up in that little crow's nest they used to have on the ships, how do you think you'd feel by the end of the day?
Sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And look what it says in verse 35. And this is what utters out of your mind. They have stricken me. And you can cross out the words, shalt thou say, and. Those four words. Should say this. They have stricken me. I was not sick, but I was not wounded. They have stricken me, and I was not wounded.
You did it to yourself.
That's right. They have beaten me, and I knew it not, or felt it not, but I knew it not. When I awake, I will seek it yet again. Now, tell me about this person.
It's habitual.
It's habitual. They're stupid. They keep going back and repeating it over and over again. But they never learned anything.
But you don't understand. It makes me relax.
That's what they say.
Insanity.
Yeah. Well, could you put, yes, insanity. Could you put the word prideful there because you can't admit the fact that you've done something wrong?
Well, I see that 34, when it's talked about the midst of the sea, in the midst of humanity, they beat you up all the time.
Sure they do. And it's always somebody else's fault.
Right.
It's always somebody else's fault. And they can never see that everything that ever happens in our life comes from within ourselves. Mm-hmm. Every negative thing that comes against us, doesn't it, Don?
Oh.
See there?
I did it to myself.
You sure did. Bone. That crazy bone just got popped, didn't it? Okay. Thank you, Don. Thank you for that example, Don. That was very good. Good timing. Oh, goodness. But it says, I'll seek it yet again.
But it's Dave's fault because he distracted you.
Yeah, there you go. Now, when it says, I'll yet seek it again, I had a thought there and I lost it, I think. Oh, the insanity thing we were talking about. Insanity, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing every day and expecting a different result. You know, come on. It's not going to happen. It's not going to get any better, is it? Until you change something in your thought process, nothing will change. Will it?